It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, everybody, it's Dan. Welcome to our Wednesday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. You're going to hear part one of a Hey Mary Kay podcast here today. And then tomorrow, you're going to get to hear part two of that podcast. They're going to be a little shorter than normal, just because this is a weird week. As we talked about the other day, I'm covering the Women's Final Four. So we're going to give you two parts of a AMK pod, and then we're going to come back Friday with a really long draft pod with Tim Bielik and Lance Reisland. So that was really good. Just get subscribed to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. You don't have to worry about it. It'll just show up on your phone as soon as I hit publish on all of these pods. So coming up, part one of our Hey Mary Kay edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast and Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot, a Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast here on a Wednesday. Questions from our Football Insider subscribers, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. For that, if you want to get involved and become one of our text subscribers, you get a newsletter too that one of us writes a few times a week. You get that every day, but you know, we contribute to it usually once or twice a week. And then you can also get access to those stories on cleveland.com that are behind the paywall. So again, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. So let's start here. This is something we've sort of addressed, but I think it's worth talking about right off the top. I know it's something you addressed over the weekend as well. It comes from Greg in Indianapolis. Hey, Mary Kay, why keep Greg Newsome? He is very inconsistent, and the Browns could clear some salary cap room. I liked what I saw from Cam Mitchell, and this is relevant because the Browns have a decision coming up on Greg. He would have his fifth-year option, which would cost a little over $13 million in 2025, not in 2024, but it just sort of makes him a topic of conversation here.
Well, first of all, he is Andrew Berry's first-round draft pick, and Andrew does not part with those draft picks easily. We know that about him, especially those first-round picks. You want to make sure that you're giving them all the time that they need to be able to develop. And then in terms of cornerbacks, this is a team that really values its cornerbacks, and they believe that they have three bona fide starting cornerbacks right now in Denzel Ward, in Martin Emerson, in Greg Newsome. We've all seen before that there are times where you've got three or four games where one of your cornerbacks is hurt, and it's nice to be able to plug someone else right in there. But as of right now, when you're playing against three wides all the time, they have three really, really good cornerbacks to be able to do that. So I don't see that happening. I do see them picking up the fifth-year option. And when you think about the fifth-year option, that amount of money is starting to not sound like too much money to me. When you see some of the receiver salaries that are going down this offseason, you're going to find players such as CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson making north of $30 million a year. So $13 million for a starting first-round cornerback sounds kind of like a bargain to me. I think they will pick that up in a heartbeat, and I absolutely think that they will hang on to Greg Newsome. I don't see this happening. I know that the rumors are out there everywhere. We did ask Andrew Berry about this at the owners' meetings, and he basically dismissed them.
You know, I also think a little bit about Jed Wills, right? And I feel like we know more about Greg Newsome now than we did when the Browns made their decision on Jed Wills. I feel like it's a hard sell to think that the Browns would just be willing to not protect that asset, if nothing else. Whether he's going to be with the team through the life of this contract or not. It would be hard for me to believe that based on what Greg has done, and he's shown he can start and play in the NFL, it's just hard for me to believe that they look at this and say, you know, we're just going to let him walk after 4 years. We're not even going to pick up that fifth year option because, you know, at best you have a good versatile player you can have on the field as a key part of your defense. At worst, you have an asset that you can flip for a draft pick in a year. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of ways it can go. And I just think picking up that fifth year option is a big part of it. I just don't think they'll be flippant about that.
No, it's a no-brainer to do that. It really is. Once again, when you're talking about $13 million for a player of that caliber who can come in there and start games for you or be at the very least your nickel corner and play inside and do something that isn't necessarily easy for a lot of cornerbacks to do, when you've got that skill set, you don't take that very lightly at all. They think so highly of their whole entire secondary. They want to keep building it, not detract from it. I don't know. I've never really felt like there was much to this. Maybe it's because Greg has asked to be traded before, but he's completely bought into the program now. I will be shocked if something like this happens. Now, having said that, we know that things can change on a dime on draft day if something arises where there's a player that they see in I don't know, first round, second round, where they decide that they want to try to wheel and deal, maybe something changes. But I really don't believe that they are heading into the draft or the rest of the offseason thinking about either acquiring another big name player or trading away a big name player.
I think with Greg, the question is not necessarily the fifth year option and if he would be here past this offseason. I think it's kind of what happens after that. Because, you know, you're right, $13 million isn't that much money. Now, you know, as far as corners are concerned, it would be a little bit high. It would probably put him in the top. And this is, you know, for this year, this could change, you know, as these markets reset. It would probably put him in the top 15 or 20 as far as cornerback, as far as per year average is concerned. It's a lot for a guy who is your primary nickel, but he can play outside. He can do both. And again, you know he can play. You know what he is. You know what he brings to the field. So, I don't know. I would just suck it up and pay it, honestly. And can always renegotiate it like they did with Jed this year. But after that, I'd be curious. Because I'm sure in Greg's mind, he would love to get that opportunity to go out there and get that Denzel Ward type of contract. And as it is right now, he's not going to get it. So, I just wonder what that looks like over the next 2 years as a member of the Cleveland Browns. And then also, I think it is probably hard to see him here past the end of that contract, especially if Martin Emerson keeps playing well.
Yeah, you're right. It's not just that fifth year option. And it's the same way with Jed. You have to decide if you want to pay these guys the big bucks over the long haul. Are they going to get that top of market next contract? That's really the key issue here. And that's what they do have to decide about Greg. And it will come down to economics and finances because they do have a lot of big contracts that they are working off of right now. Still Deshaun's for a number of years. And then you've got Miles and the list goes on and on. So they are going to have to decide what they want to do with that long term. And some of it will depend on how does Cam Mitchell continue to come along? What do they end up with in the draft this year and whatnot? Because we know that they like to draft cornerbacks. And safeties. They like to keep stocking their secondary. And that's smart. They're good at it. They're really good at it. The other thing is you can end up in some cases getting some trade value for a player like that and recoup something. So I think they have some options here. And of course, after the fifth year option, you can always do a franchise type of thing. There are many different options, but the long-term future of Greg, I don't know for sure that we know it yet. But in the short term, I don't see him getting traded.
I want to stick with the Andrew Berry draft pick thing here. How much of a factor is that, do you think, in his decision-making? Because there haven't been many picks that he's moved on from. There's, you know, just off the top of my head, obviously, Perrion Winfrey is one. That was, you know, an off-the-field situation. Cade York was one, but now he's back. So I don't even know that we can include that. You know, Demetric Felton, I guess he traded Donovan Peoples-Jones in the last year of his contract, but when he drafts a guy especially high, and he hasn't made many first-round picks because of the Deshaun Watson trade, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's going to be hard for him to want to give up on a guy like that.
And there are a few later round picks that he has let go of. Anthony Schwartz, Richard right. LeCount, some of those kinds of guys. But when you're talking about his early picks, his first round picks, second round picks, he's loath to give those up. Now, this year, they did let Jordan Elliott walk in free agency, and he was a third rounder. And it appears that Jacob Phillips will not be back. So he is letting some of these guys go. So he doesn't hang on to them way past their due date. But I do think that he's nowhere near ready to give up on Greg yet. I don't think he's ready to give up on Jed Wills yet. I think they looked at Jed as someone who was banged up a little bit, injured, had to find his way, and that he was kind of starting to come into his own last season. And in terms of pass block win rate, he was way up there in the top 10 when he suffered his season-ending knee injury. That shocks a lot of people, but it is the truth. And that is according to ESPN's analytics. So I think they feel the upside is still there for Jed. I also have to wonder sometimes if they might not flip-flop the two. I don't think they have any plans to do that yet, moving DeJuan Jones over to the left side and moving Jed over to the right side where he played in college, albeit for a left-handed quarterback in Tua, so he was still blocking for his blind side. But there is an option to do that, and it's something to explore down the road. But I just don't think that Andrew Berry is going to be willing to give up on these guys anytime soon. He drafts them extremely young, and gives them a chance to develop.
Yeah, and I think they value the idea of having those rookie contracts as well. Because like you said, they have let guys walk. I just meant before those rookie contracts are up. Mm-hmm. And now this year they've let a few of those guys walk. But I do think, like, and honestly, here's the other thing. The system works if, you know, Greg Newsome, if he plays well, and if they ultimately can't afford him because they have to pay Denzel and they have to pay Martin Emerson, and he goes someplace else, and then Cam Mitchell slides in and does what Greg Newsome did, that's okay too. That means, I mean, that's how it's supposed to work. You can't pay everybody. So you want to develop young talent behind these guys.
Yeah, that is how it's supposed to work. And again, and we've seen it happen with other teams, you know, it just, the system actually is very efficient. But once again, there's just something in my mind that tells me that Andrew Berry still believes in Greg Newsome enough that they're going to want to keep him around. They're going to want to have him be a part of this defense for the foreseeable future. Not sure if it's going to be the long-term blockbuster contract, but I do think that they see some great things in him. I think they believe he can build on what he did last year. And last year was the first year that he really embraced the nickelback role, and he really kind of got into it and bought into the program with that. So let's see how it goes this year in his second season in it, when he can kind of build on that.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay, some more questions here, and I'm going to dip into some questions, too, that we got for our draft pod that didn't really fit in there, but I wanted to save them as well for when we did a Hey MK pod. So some of these were in response to the draft pod that you're going to hear from Lance and Tim coming on Friday, but this one comes from Ken Lieb in Westchester, Ohio. Hey, Mary Kay, there's one thing that troubles me about Deshaun Watson, and that's the length of time he holds onto the ball before releasing it, which makes him vulnerable to huge hits and injuries. He has to improve that. We're paying primo money for a guy who spends a bunch of time standing on the sidelines. Does this concern the head coach enough to make it a priority to improve on?
That's a great question. And I think this is where Ken Dorsey is going to really come in handy, because Ken Dorsey has spent his entire career working with those dual threat quarterbacks in Cam Newton and Josh Allen, where he really knows exactly how to coach them up in terms of when to hold them and when to fold them. And I think he will be very instrumental in helping Deshaun figure out how much time he has before he's got to get rid of that ball, and when he has to give up on a play and live to see another day, especially coming off of a shoulder surgery, and especially knowing that there's a 17 game season and playoffs to consider. So I do think that Ken will be very, very helpful in that regard with Deshaun. And Deshaun is going to have to also learn that he, you know, there is another down coming up in most cases, and you can throw it away or do whatever else you might have to do. But I also think that it's going to help him now that he does have at least one more potential 1,000 yard receiver out there running patterns for him, and that he should have some more opportunities to go through his progressions and find a kind of open man. Not always going to be open per se, although Jerry Jeudy is enough of a route runner that he does a pretty nice job of getting open. But I think that Deshaun's going to see more things out there that he likes. I think the addition of Jerry Jeudy will open things up for Elijah Moore. So when you've got three wides out there, you can go through your progressions, and I think that you're going to find some kind of a weapon out there that you will feel comfortable getting the ball to fairly quickly. So I think when you put all of those things together, it will be more efficient this year.
I don't think that Ken is necessarily wrong here about how long Deshaun holds the ball. He does hold the ball a lot. And I'm looking right now on PFF's average time to throw. He was third last year among qualified quarterbacks at 3.13 seconds. You know, but not far down the list is Patrick Mahomes at 3.04 seconds. And there's years, you know, Josh Allen at 2.91. So holding the ball in that time to throw isn't necessarily a bad thing all the time. Like, sometimes that's how some of these quarterbacks play. And I think Deshaun is just always going to be up that list because he's going to look to make plays. He's going to, if the initial reads aren't there, he's going to go and try to make a play with his legs. And that doesn't mean necessarily scrambling, but it means buying time to make a throw down the field or buying time for somebody else to get open. So I think that number is going to be high. And I think there's a balance, and I think you're right. That's where Ken Dorsey's going to help, because I think he understands we need to find a way to help Deshaun protect himself, but also still be Deshaun. And I think Ken probably understands that balance from those years of working with Josh Allen in particular.
I think he does. And you don't want to coach that playmaking ability out of Deshaun. It's what makes Deshaun who he is. It's what makes Patrick Mahomes who he is, and Josh Allen and some of these other dual threat quarterbacks who have this street ball playmaking mentality where they've never met a down where they didn't feel like they could find or make a play. So that's a good aspect of Deshaun Watson that you don't want to lose that. By the same token, like you said, you have to strike the balance. You have to find the balance between keeping him safe, playing within the system, and also giving him carte blanche to go out there and make the crazy plays that most quarterbacks cannot make. And that's the beauty of Deshaun.
I also think, you know, the injuries that we're talking about aren't necessarily him taking hits in the pocket. Right. I mean, there's the Tennessee hit that was on a scramble. We don't actually know what hit it was in the Baltimore game, if we are actually acknowledging that it was two separate injuries. So we don't know when it happened in the Baltimore game. And I don't think I've even seen anyone throw out like a speculative play on Twitter or anything. So a lot of it is kind of it's when he does decide to run. And when he does, it's not so much him standing in the pocket and letting a play develop or trying to make something happen, you know, within the pocket or scrambling around behind the line of scrimmage to make a throw. It's when he does decide to sort of put his head down and get those two or three extra yards on a scramble.
Yes, absolutely. And let me just address that injury for one quick second, because I've said it so many times on this pod, and I probably will continue to say it unless some surgeon or doctor comes out and tells me that I'm absolutely wrong and there's no way it could have happened that way. It just seems too coincidental to me that he takes this big hit in the Tennessee game and he has the strained rotator cuff and it doesn't behave the way anybody thinks it should, right? There was no way that strained rotator cuff, even though it came with some tears in the microfibers, they never believed that that was supposed to prevent him from playing football. It was supposed to be sort of a minor thing. And it never was. It never was. He could not throw the ball the way that he previously did. So I still have to think that somehow, some way, there may have been a little hairline fracture in this glenoid bone. I don't know. I'm speculating, and I'm sure I'm wrong. I've been told by a number of people that that's not how it went down. But I just have to wonder, could there have been some barely perceptible little hairline fracture or something in that bone that caused it to then crack and become a fractured glenoid bone when he got into that Baltimore game? We will probably never know the answer to that. It just seems awfully coincidental that that happened in that game when he doesn't know when it happened. Because if you're going to crack your shoulder socket, generally, usually, you're going to feel that. And he never did. So we'll have to see how that goes in the end. I would love to explore that a little bit further. But Deshaun is going to be Deshaun. And they can't live in their fears. You don't go out and spend $230 million on a Deshaun Watson and then try to turn him into something that he's not. And he's a playmaker. He's a guy that runs around and he plays backyard ball and he throws from different arm angles and he throws off of his back foot, off schedule. He throws off balance just the same way that you see Patrick do. So, I mean, not exactly the same. He's not Patrick. But it's the same kind of vibe that you're going to get. And I don't think that you want to take that away from him because that's the only way he really knows how to play. That's how he came back in that Baltimore game and really kind of strapped the team on his back and won that game. Not single-handedly, but pretty darn close. So we're going to have to see how they go about this because, once again, he is your enormous financial investment. He is your enormous draft capital investment. But by the same token, you have to let him be who he is.
Okay, we touched a little bit on the receivers, but I want to get to this question from Paul in Cuyahoga Falls. Hey, Mary Kay, outside of a possible addition in the draft, do you think the Browns' wide receiver room is set? Do you see a scenario where the Browns might be tempted to bring in a slot receiver like Tyler Boyd or take a chance on someone like Hunter Renfrow, given his history with Deshaun Watson?
You know, it's a great question. There is one element that I believe is still missing from the room, and that is blazing speed. Blazing speed. They've tried to have it in the last couple of years to stretch defenses. That was the point of drafting Anthony Schwartz, and that was the point of signing Marquise Goodwin, who is still a free agent right now. So I have to think that maybe, just maybe, they have something like that up their sleeve, but that's something that you could possibly find in the draft. I think there was good speed in this receiver class. There is good speed in this receiver class. And if you see someone who can come in and play that role for you, we already know they have their top three receivers who will be playing primarily in those three receiver sets. And then you have the supplemental receivers in David Bell and Cedric Tillman. But you could still use a rookie, a draft pick that can go out there and bring that element of we cannot catch up with you speed that can get behind a defense like that. And Deshaun, of course, has the arm to get the ball to a player like that. So I do think that they could add something like that, whether it's in the draft, free agency, trade. But in terms of signing a bigger name free agent like a Tyler Boyd or a Hunter Renfrow, I'm not feeling it right now. But that might be one of those things where you get through the draft and then you see what you still need.
Yeah, so people will hear this on Friday when they listen to the draft pod. But one of the things, we did talk a lot about some of the draft receivers. But I think one of the things that we kind of got into also was this receiver room, the top of this receiver room is set. Like they don't, you know, you're going to have Amari Cooper as your one and then some combination of Jerry Jeudy and Elijah Moore at 2 and 3. And, you know, they can change between slot and outside, whatever they want to do. So that top of that is set. Now, that doesn't mean the room is complete because I think we still all feel, I mean, I'm with you. I feel like this room is still a little short. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they want to see what Cedric Tillman can do. I I don't know. I wish I kind of had a feel about like David Bell. Like, do they still kind of want to see if David Bell can kind of become something? We just talked about Andrew not liking to give up on draft picks. So it's year three for him. Do they want to see if maybe he can build off some of the moments he had last year? I think that's part of it too, is they still might want to see some of these guys who are already in the roster kind of have an opportunity to get some reps in some of those roles. I still worry that they're like an injury away from being short a wide receiver again. But with the top of that room set, I think there's some flexibility with what they want to do. If they want to draft a receiver, if they want to get some guy in free agency who gets released or cut or waived or something, I don't feel like there's a panic necessarily. They don't absolutely have to go do something right away.
No, they don't. And I think that is in large part because of Deshaun coming back healthy. They really believe that will elevate the pass catching core and that you will see more out of Elijah Moore with a healthy Deshaun Watson and a consistent quarterback situation for him. And that when Jerry Jeudy is on the field with Amari Cooper, that will open things up for Elijah Moore. And with Jerry Jeudy on the field, that will give Deshaun another really good bona fide weapon. I mean, he's a first round receiver, and he is a number one in his own right. On some teams, he would be a number one receiver, even though he didn't have a chance to necessarily live up to his potential. That's what you draft a guy that high for, to be your number one, not to be your number two. He is your number two here because he's averaging $16.25 million. And that's what you pay to your number two receiver. So make no mistake about that. Right now, he has elevated and leapfrogged over Elijah Moore into the number two role, even though it doesn't mean that Elijah and Amari won't sometimes be on the field together, as you mentioned, in two wides. And the other thing to remember about this is that David Njoku is one of the top two targets, at least for right now, in terms of the Cleveland Browns pass catching core. It's Amari and David. How is the addition of Jerry Jeudy going to impact that? I think they look at it right now in the moment that they have three potential Pro Bowl 1,000-yard pass catchers in Amari, Jerry, and David. And then Elijah can get close. And there's not enough footballs to go around for everybody to get 9 touchdowns and 1,200 yards, of course. But I think they feel that they have those three really solid weapons in the same way that Joe Burrow for all these years has had his three really good premier weapons. So I think they feel pretty good about it. And if they did nothing else at receiver, nothing else, I think they're very excited about what they have.
Okay, that'll do it for part one of the podcast. Check out part two tomorrow, where we continue talking more about Elijah Moore and answer more questions from our listeners, from our Football Insider subscribers, which again, you can find by going to cleveland.com/Browns, clicking on the blue banner at the top of the page to get info on that and get involved. Thanks for listening, everybody.